We've come to the end of the season. 12 episodes of inspirational discussions and some surprising revelations about life on the other side. I'm not sure what I expected to hear. I went into the season with an open mind and keen to get the cheat sheet on survival as a Black Brit in the US. I got a bit more than I bargained for, and I couldn't be happier. I've heard some never-before-told stories. I've again actioned one of my life's purposes, which is to amplify Black voices. And I've connected with some pretty amazing people who I know I'll be staying in touch with. As a journalist, I'm always fascinated with untold stories and histories of people that I can relate to, and it warms my heart to know that I'm part of a much bigger community of immigrants who deserve some acknowledgement and attention. I anticipated that there would be many things that I'd need to adjust to moving from London to Henderson, Nevada. In short, my story is I met the most amazing man on holiday, and whilst we had a holiday connection and not even a holiday romance, this turned into a long distance friendship to begin with, then relationship, resulting in marriage. And hubby and I spent some time weighing up the pros and cons, the advantages, the disadvantages, the do's, the don'ts, the wish lists, and all the rest as we mapped out our next steps in our relationship. So many things to consider, like healthcare, social environment, career opportunities, family support, education, weather, that was a biggie, and lifestyle. Heck, we even discussed pensions and retirement. We decided the US would be best, or at least the better option for our family. Rather than reinvent the wheel and figure this whole thing out on my own, though, I decided to reach out to others who had gone ahead of me, and they connected me with others who had also gone ahead of them. Surely they would help me navigate this new and exciting journey and give me the secret survival tips required when given the opportunity to potentially start all over. That's how American Dreamers was born. Black folks with lived experience in both the US and the UK helping me, Claire Clottie, decide whether life was better on the other side. Let's keep it real. It's not easy moving abroad or relocating, and the stereotypes and preconceived ideas of what it means to be Black in nations that are predominantly non-Black make the planning, opportunities, survival, adventures, and stories of Black people that bit more extraordinary. There were many light bulb moments for me throughout the season, and as hard as I tried, I wanted to put them together in a seamless, thematic way to build a picture of the social, emotional, and well-being benefits for Black immigrants. I'm not sure I've managed because, as I say, there was just so much to unpack in these episodes. So what I've done instead is picked moments that resonated with me, and herein lies this bonus episode. So I'm going to take you right back to the beginning. I'm not going to tell you everything that's in the podcast because they're there for your enjoyment and you can always listen back. My first guest was someone who, you know, I think out of everyone on the podcast, I probably known the longest in the sense that we went to school together, but I actually hadn't seen or spoken to her in, well, since we left school, so nearly like 20 years. And it was great to converse with Maurice Gordon. Now, Maurice was established, like myself, in the UK. She had a thing going on. Things were working in her favour. She was travelling. She had a bit of money in her pocket. And then she more or less up sticks and moved to a very similar city, London to New York. I mean, more or less the same thing, right? But the thing that really resonated with me is really being conscious of what it means to be Black in the US.
I guess when you're from somewhere, you're kind of just embedded, right? You're just embedded into the environment. So whether you're blind to certain things that take place or you've just been kind of conditioned to accept certain things, I don't think I've really had any issues in London. I don't think so. I've never kind of really seen myself as different or an outcast or whatever it may be. And if I did, I was always using it to my advantage. So landing in the US, you know, one, it's an English-speaking place, so that's one barrier you do not need to cross. It's another big city, so you understand how they're going to work, right? It's not like you're moving to this remote location where no one, you don't speak the language and you'd really kind of struggle to kind of fit in. You'd have to do a lot more work to fit in. It was like a, you know, a natural kind of move into that whole international business experience, I think. And so that's the opportunity that came to me, and it was a no-brainer to kind of just jump on it. I'd been here before. You think you understand America because you get in it and you live in it. It's another story.
Tell me more about that story.
Yeah, so once you're here, I honestly, like, this is where I've experienced anxiety for the first time. I was like, what is happening to me? And someone's like, oh, it's anxiety. I was like, what? And then, like, just general stress, right? Or just oppression. Like, you just feel this weight on you all of a sudden. And you kind of wonder, like, how have I got through my entire life as a Black person and never really felt this deep of a stressor on your existence, you know?
That's amazing. So you're telling me that you have felt, not more Black, but you've really felt the weight of being Black in America.
Yeah.
More so than being in the UK.
Yeah, I 100% do think that.
When you listen back to the first episode, Single Successful Black Females, you will see that it's a perfectly fitting title for Maurice Gordon. The second episode of this series was called Options, and my cousin didn't actually have a choice or an option as to whether or not she was going to feature. I just said, cuz, you're doing this, and she said, yay, okay, let's get it on. Jane Asomwa was born, like myself, to Ghanaian immigrant parents, mine being in the UK, hers being in the USA. Jane's mum, my Auntie Joyce, used to live in the UK. In fact, she lived in the UK for 30 years before heading to Miami to raise her family. And just like her mum, Jane has never been afraid of moving to a different place and setting up home. She's always had this affiliation and connection to the UK, not just through my aunt and our family, but just because of her, I think, her immigrant genes, if that's even a thing.
For me, growing up in, got to keep it specific to South Florida, right? So growing up in South Florida, like Miami, Florida, suburbs, et cetera, is a really unique experience in terms of the blend of cultures that you have there. You have a lot of Latin Americans, a lot of West Indians, just a lot of immigrants or first generation Americans. And what that means is a blend and a coming together of cultures that is really nice, because it helped me, and I think it helped anyone growing up there, to really broaden their horizons, broaden their mind. Like, it gives them more perspective on life, on people, and gives them greater exposure to people outside of themselves. And that's something that is really like an integral part of who I am today. But we have to caveat that with the majority populations there were West Indian and Latin American, at least what I grew up around. And when I moved to New York, again, also super diverse. But we have to remember, I was in Lower Manhattan. Lower Manhattan is white. And the students I went to school with were also white. But the Black students I went to school with were either African, like international students, or they were first generation American students born to African parents like me. And that was actually some of my first exposure to other people who were like me. It's when I got to university, and I thought that that was a cool experience. I actually really liked it, and being able to relate to people on that level. And it's something that I've really appreciated, but only have really gotten to know in New York in small doses. And I want to caveat this. If you grew up in Washington, D.C. in the United States, you'd have a completely different experience. If you grew up in the Bronx and Crown Heights and other parts in Queens and other parts of New York, you would have a completely different experience, and you'd probably have more of that exposure. But where I'm from personally, I didn't have that exposure. I didn't grow up around a lot of people like me. And then when I moved to New York, I got small doses of that being centered around Manhattan, specifically Lower Manhattan. And the draw for me to London, outside of family, like you said, is I have lived my life around a bunch of people that don't necessarily share the same culture as me. And while I appreciate that, it's really helped me grow, been an integral part of my life. Something I really want to say, like, I genuinely value and want for anyone else. I think it'd be nice for a change, just to get some time, some period of time in my life where I can be around people of my own culture, when I could be around other Ghanaians, other West Africans, and just really be able to relate to people on that front.
That's so funny, because you could just go to Ghana and experience that. You want to go to the UK to experience Ghana.
To be fair, if you go to Ghana, you're experiencing Ghanaians. You're right. But there is something different about being British Ghanaian or Ghanaian American and having the layer of having parents or grandparents who are immigrants. And that is something that someone in Ghana cannot, born, raised in Ghana, et cetera, cannot relate to.
I think many children of immigrants, wherever they come from, can relate to that story, but especially Black immigrants and their experience of what it's like to evolve, assimilate, or stand out in the Western world. I have a whole new experience of diversity now that I live in Nevada. That was one thing that I was definitely not going to compromise on with my husband on our checklist of where is better for us to develop and grow our family. Being in Las Vegas is amazing because it is really diverse. I mean, everyone is here, and even if they don't live here, they come and visit here. It's like the world's biggest playground. But culture is taking me on a whole new journey. Diversity is meaning something quite different to what I experience diversity as in the UK. Of course, there's 9 strands of diversity in the UK Equality Act. But when it comes to cultural diversity, my norm is the Irish, the Polish, the Caribbean, the Indian and the West African community, and in very large numbers. Here in the US, in Nevada in particular, I'm experiencing a more of the Hispanic community, and Asian means something quite different to me. For me, when I think Asian in the UK, I think Indian, Pakistani, Bengali, Sri Lankan, the list goes on and on. When Americans refer to Asians, they're talking about China, Japan, Korea, other parts of Asia that wouldn't automatically come to my mind in the UK. I'm being introduced to Mexican culture. Makes sense. Mexico is down the road. It's really enjoyable. But I can't pretend that I don't miss those home comforts. Michelle Stewart could really relate to me when it came to those home comforting foods that you find all over the place in the UK. Now, she was on the 3rd episode called Starting All Over. Michelle was really honest about some of the challenges that she had and the impact on her mental health. Her insights on getting support as a Black woman in America from another Black person, i.e. a Black female therapist, what she had to say made me realize that actually, whilst there are so many differences, there is still something that connects Black people and makes us understand each other's experiences that much better, or perhaps with more ease, whether or not we're from the UK or USA. Did you feel confident that an American therapist could understand and support you with your needs, being that you are Black, British, Caribbean, and not American?
Exactly. And we've kind of explored a little bit of that. But I think for me to have identified and made good relationship with a therapist here, you know, I looked at her credentials, but it was nice to have another Black female, because I feel, regardless of geographics, a Black woman hopefully should understand a Black woman, right? And all she endures and all she goes through just daily. One thing that we definitely look at and have looked at in some of our sessions is the kind of social supports to not be so isolated and lonely, because that is something else that can, I guess, increase the depression or make it worse, because you kind of feel like, okay, I'm physically alone. Just because you're physically alone doesn't mean that you are necessarily alone. And so it's kind of flipping your script and getting your mind to think those ways.
Michelle, like several of the guests on this podcast series, have shown that it takes strength and courage, resilience, determination, hope, and hard work to live out your dreams. The following episode features Orlando Parker Jr., who claimed his space in the UK, coming all the way from Detroit in the USA. He takes us down memory lane a little bit and shows how your visualizations and dreams can actually come to fruition. Just put it on Facebook and see what happens. I mean, it's a great place to hold yourself accountable, right?
It's so funny because, you know, when you post on Facebook, you get those memories a year later, telling you what you said or what you were doing the prior year. So I remember traveling to the UK for the very first time in 2015. And I remember the week after I got back to the States saying on Facebook, I could see myself living here or living there. And it was just one of those things, you know, you're posting and you don't really think anything more of it. And then I saw the memory pop up again late last year after I had made the move. And it was just like this aha moment of, wow, like manifest destiny, or just like putting things out into the universe and seeing them come to fruition. You know, sometimes the subconscious has desires and it wants to do certain things, and it will happen. It will manifest whether you're consciously trying to do that or not, is what I've learned.
See, here's the thing, right? We, you know, several of us have the privilege of traveling around and going on holidays and touring. And every time I go to a new destination, I fall in love. Oh my gosh, I really want to live here. This is beautiful. I can see myself setting up home here.
Yeah.
So there's kind of seeing it because you had a little bit of a taste of it. And there's actually, right, you know what? I'm going to pack my bags and I am doing this. How does one get from, you know, fantasizing about the whole idea of living in a new country to actually doing it?
Ooh. So for me, it was a lot of research. I didn't just say, okay, I want to live there, so I'm going to buy a plane ticket, sell all my things, and just leave. I was traveling here 2 to 3 times a year for about 5 years before I finally moved here. And during that time, what I was doing was building relationships with local business owners, with people in my industry. I'm a singer first. So with pub owners, venue owners, other musicians, I was recording, I was shooting music videos here, and also just not taking from the community or giving something back. So I was doing music videos, but I was actually hiring the production team to do the video. So it was like this give and take and just establishing myself here so that when I moved, I would have some roots here. I would have, you know, career opportunities, income, revenue streams already set in place. And so that's the way I did it. And no one told me to do it that way. I didn't read any books saying that that's what you do. It was just what I felt like I needed to do to make it happen for me. I was able to do it just by being genuine and always being a walking resume.
Orlando was the first man to feature on the podcast series. And that's because the truth is, it wasn't easy to find them. You'd think that with the portrayal of Black men in the media, yes, of course, there's some success stories. We see it in entertainment. We see it in sports. To a certain degree, we see it in politics. But let's face it, Black American men are politicized, over-policed, and there's often stories regarding pain and suffering. So why wouldn't they want to get away? Why wouldn't they want to escape the US and perhaps head on over to the UK? What motivated or pushed Orlando to move, especially when he didn't have any examples of others like him doing it before him?
But I think I come from a family where it was like no one was ever subservient or walked around with their heads down. I come from an educated family of predominantly women on my mother's side, very strong women, college educated women, worldly women. And so I guess my outlook on the world is I see it for what it is, but I also see my place in it. And I believe in being sort of aggressive and ambitious and demanding and taking what's yours. And so, you know, that's kind of how I approach everything. It's like I deserve to be here just as much as anyone else does.
The idea of moving abroad, relocating, you know, sounds so glamorous and exciting and fun. And whilst that has been the case, there have been moments where I felt really frustrated and irritated trying to get the basics sorted, like find a hairdresser's. That's a very important thing for a Black woman, trust me. Whilst I have found my Black communities in Las Vegas, there have been times where I've been very conscious of the fact that I am a Black Brit. I am other. Joanne Griffiths touches on this more on episode 5, Bigger and Better.
Finding a hairdresser. And it was, I remember I came out here, like, you know, I was doing some television, and it was the year that it was like the final Harry Potter book came out, The Deathly Hallows. And it was, you know, big thing out here. And I got a call from the Beeb and they were like, oh, you know, would you be able to go and cover it for us? I was like, yeah, of course. But I kind of remember looking at my head and being like, wait.
Yes.
So, you know, you get on Google and it's like, all right. And I have natural hair, you know, and it was really long back then. And I literally was wearing it kind of in cornrows and twists that I could get done down the street from my house in Tottenham for like £35. no big deal. Came out here and I'm like, it's one of my assumptions. It's like, oh, well, it's LA. There's a lot of black people here. There's a lot of black women here. There's Hollywood here. Oh, it's going to be really easy to get my hair done. Not so. So I found this one place. I made an appointment. I went. It was like an absolute horror show getting my hair done. And this was like a black hair salon that specialized in natural hair care. But I was like, okay, whatever. Like, let me just get it done. And it's finished. And of course, I hadn't asked about how much it cost because I'm like, well, it was £35 back in the UK. Like, it cannot be that expensive. So I get to the front and I was like, oh, how much? And she's like, oh, it's $200. And I looked at her. I was like, really?
Do you think she exploited the fact that you were British and you had a British
accent? 100%. Because there were no kind of prices up. But the reason why I know that she was trying it on is that there were two people that worked on my hair. But the guy who'd worked on my hair, he slipped me his number and he was like, when you need your hair done again, call me. And when he did it, it was $80. Which was probably still a little bit more than regular folk were paying. But I was like, okay. So that put me on my guard that not everyone welcomes the accent. And that people, sure. And it's just a very easy way for you to be targeted. So suffice to say, I never went back there again. And I used that guy and paid the $80 and it was very lovely.
Throughout the series of American Dreamers, the diversity of Black identity continues to unfold. What it means to be Black in the UK versus the USA as opposed to anywhere else in the world, that comes up quite a lot. Now, Shireen Walker, who is living and loving life in Milton Keynes, went from Jamaica to the US to the UK, but feels more Jamaican in the UK. She showed me two sides of the coin and I really couldn't make heads or tails of it. That's such a British thing to say, but that's the only saying that kind of applies in this situation.
To America, definitely. I found out once I moved there, a lot of my friends were from other countries. And for some reason, we kind of just met each other and just gravitated towards each other. But I find that overall, the culture in America, like once you move there from another country, there's kind of this expectation to assimilate and to become American. So almost immediately I lost my Jamaican accent and I started to speak with more of an American accent. And you just start to just assimilate more into the American culture. Funny enough, I moved to the UK and my Jamaican accent came back.
Yeah, I can hear it.
Yeah, a lot of people now say that I sound more Jamaican than American. And I feel like people that I've met here from other countries, they hold on more to where they're from than becoming British. So people are still like, I have a lot of friends who are from Nigeria and Ghana. And they might have been born here and their families are from Nigeria and Ghana, but they still have a strong sense of where their culture is. And the food is still being prepared in the house, like the Nigerian food, and they still speak their different languages. Whereas that wasn't my experience in the U.S., like people just assimilated quicker there.
What do you think the US has given you or gave you that maybe Jamaica didn't and maybe has given you an advantage in the UK?
Resilience, opportunity. That's one thing I see lacking in the UK is the opportunity for Black people. So I didn't just move to America by myself. Like a lot of my high school friends were all moved around at the same time and go to school there as well. And I see how they have climbed their career ladders, how they've progressed in their careers. I don't see that kind of progression here in the UK. Across companies or companies within my industry, I don't see a lot of Black leadership, which I see in the US, in the education sector, HBCUs. I don't see that in the UK. So I feel like in America, what has America given me? I guess a strong sense of pride in being Black and being a part of a community that's willing to fight and uplift each other. Whereas here in the UK, yeah, we can be our authentic selves, but I don't feel like the community is, I guess, unified with everybody being Jamaican here and Nigerian there and Ghanaian there. Like we're all little pockets of Black people within the UK, but we're not big one community.
So obviously living in the US, I've learned quite a lot in this short space of time. I have been really surprised to discover that the cost of living in the US doesn't compare to when I was a tourist in the US. And yes, I did say that through gritted teeth. I used to get so excited about the fact that the sterling, the pound coin, went a very long way when I was a tourist. But now I've been living here, oh, it's a whole nother ball game. I'd learnt to this point a whole lot about the cost of living in the US and the cost of healthcare in particular. And at this point in the series, I was getting a whole load of mixed messages about what it means and costs, both emotionally, mentally, financially, to be a Black person in the US versus the UK. Jamar King shared some Black and white experiences and thoughts on episode 7, Mixed Views on Race, and also touched on a common theme that had been emerging throughout several of the episodes, particularly from Black Brits who'd moved to the US.
I've learned over the years, you know, I'm 6'4". Good, I'm a big fella. Plus, I got the bald head, so I'm a little intimidating at times. I've learned a long time ago how to pick up on people's little subtle facial expressions. So, not against white people. I'm off white. This, that, and this. It is what it is. But I walk into some rooms, and there's nothing but white people in there. And I'll see the subtle eyebrow twitch, like, that they didn't realize they did. Like, what's he doing here? Why is he here? You know what I mean? Stuff like that. And then I start talking to them, and right away they go, excuse me, where are you from? You have an accent. And I go, oh, I'm from Liverpool. And they say, oh, the Beatles and blah, blah, blah. And I go, yeah, the Beatles and Liverpool football team, but they go, the Beatles. Then I see the walls go down and they're more open, but it doesn't make me feel great because of their initial reaction when I walked in. It shouldn't matter if I'm from Liverpool, from Compton, from the Bronx, from wherever. It's like I see this flash in their eye or realization that, and I don't use the word very often. I mean, I know I use it today, but that was saying what Alex said. But I get the feeling that the thinking in the head and the processing it that he's not a nigger, he's European. Therefore, he's safe.
That's so interesting on two fronts, because in the UK now, you'd just be a mixed race man. But from the sounds of things, you're just a Black man in America. You're not necessarily a mixed race man in America. You're a Black man in America.
Yeah.
I love Jamar's Liverpudlian accent. It warmed my heart, reminded me of experiences that I've had in his hometown in the UK. But his insights were very hard-hitting and they were very deep and honest. Similarly to those of interracial couple Anna Finch and Brian Teasley. I felt like a fly on the wall in their relationship, and I really enjoyed listening to how they navigate discussions about race and tolerance and learning about each other's cultures, and also having honest conversations about what their life would be like should they move to where Anna's family are from. That's Bath in the UK. Or stay in Louisiana in the South.
Do you think that you would be treated better in general as a Black man in the UK than you would be in the US?
I don't think it would be better. I think it would probably be different. There's a lot of, you know, everybody talks about microaggressions. In the US, there tends to be a lot more macroaggressions. So at least you generally know where you stand with somebody, especially in the South. They'll let you know, just how they feel about you. Or, you know, especially I get, oh, you speak very well. You know, it's very right in your face.
All the time. I mean, I'm just thinking of that woman that we met. She was the racism bingo card. And it almost became funny at the moment,
yeah,
because we had the, oh, well, you speak incredibly well for a Black man.
Yep.
Then she said, oh, can I ask you about your dreadlocks? Because my daughter has dreadlocks and people have told her that she is culturally appropriating. But then she goes on to say, but I asked all my little Black friends about it and got their opinion. I mean, I'm just watching her, just my jaw dropping from her confidence that none of this sounded wrong to her.
Yeah. And so I don't think I'd probably get that in the UK.
Right.
I think it would be more of the microaggressions, the little everyday things that kind of just start to needle at you a little bit. And so it's not like it's not those things that you come home just angry about because something happened to you or something was said to you. It's the things that you almost don't even notice. And you're just like the sideways glances, the maybe not expecting you to be able to afford something in a store. things like that.
There were so many entertaining moments throughout that conversation. Nothing beats eavesdropping on an intimate relationship, getting all the goss up front. I'm not going to spoil it for you. You can listen back to all of the episodes that I've touched on so far. There are many Black people who have made a life on the other side seem more favorable for them. Jesse Chukwu, the notable content creator, captured both the US and the UK audience through his funny comparisons and sketches on YouTube and his YouTube channel, Chooks. Jesse shared his thoughts on episode 9, similar yet different.
Do you feel like you're going to run out of comparisons?
I think no. Because I don't have to always do a new comparison. Like, what I started to do was kind of merge ideas. For instance, like, I have like a Black British Superman character. His issue is that he's trying to save these Americans, but they're more concerned about him being Black and British than being saved. And I feel like that feels real to me, because it always feels like that's the first thing people would talk about, you know, when I'm trying to talk about something serious. So stuff like that, I could always merge ideas and stuff and have fun with it. That I don't have to always think about, oh, what word is different in British and American? Do you know what I mean? I could just play upon just the cultural difference.
Many social issues have been covered throughout the season of American Dreamers, like healthcare, housing and finances, career opportunities and education. Now, as a parent, my interest really piqued when Jesse shared his feedback and experience of schooling in the US. And of course, I learned a lot on episode 10, which featured Mac and Blair Billing, who moved to the UK from Washington with their 4 children. Yep, that's right. They relocated with 4 children. I've only got the one. And the decisions, the thought process, all considerations have gone into what life would be, could be, should be, will be like for her in the US versus the UK. That's whether she relocates with me or she stays in the UK with her dad and decides to relocate later or whatever. There's just lots of things going on in my mind. Now, Jodie Thorson on episode 11, who moved to Miami from the UK with her daughter, also shared her interesting perspective of life for her family in the US. Both episodes gave me food for thought when considering what is in the best interest of my daughter and my family.
What was your thinking about what's going to be best for each child?
It was more so like, how did we want to continue the development for each child? From everything that we had heard about the UK school system, we heard that it would be good for the lower grades. And so that's where most of our kids are at right now. So it's a great opportunity to take that right now and see, like, how is that faring for our children? And right now, it's doing wonderful. I tell my husband all the time, I don't understand, because we put them in this school and they have to go through a transitionary time where they stay at school for about 2 to 3 hours a day and then they come home. Well, the first week of doing that, he was already coming home telling us sounds, and I'm like, I don't understand.
You mean phonics?
Yeah,
yes. That's a reference to our youngest, who, if he was back in the States, actually still would not be in school. He's in reception this year. Yeah. And so our youngest is doing really well. Really, they've all been doing well. We were not completely satisfied with the school system that they were in back in the States. And we recognized that we wanted an opportunity to change up that system, because they only get one go round at that early education, right? You need that solid foundation. If you miss it, they're kind of always behind. And so we were not committed to that school system. We were actually looking for a change. So when we had this opportunity and looking at what we've heard, everything we experienced up to this point now about the British school system, we didn't feel as though there would be a drop off in capabilities in education. And they would get the opportunity to pick up a very British accent. That's what we were hoping for.
I can sit as a mother and say I always make the best decisions for my child. And sometimes that might not be the best decision for me. So had I thought her staying in England would have been the best decision for her, I would have made that, you know, or me not even moving, I would have made that. But us taking this journey together at the stage she was in her life, watching my daughter now, she was so quiet. She still thrived, was still great at school, but she was quiet. She is so out of herself. She is determined. She's passionate, you know, and I think if you asked her, and I know she has said to someone that had she not moved here, she wouldn't be who she is now. And it's beautiful to see that this journey has really brought her out of herself. And I kind of felt that, I believed that, which is why that decision was an easy decision for me. It wasn't as easy to convince her at the time.
I bet.
But that whole thing, which my mum will always tell me, mother knows best. I'm a big believer in you're going to get to a point in your life that you're going to be so blessed that you've been schooled in two countries. You've had the opportunity to have so many more doors open to you that other people haven't had. Me saying that to you at the moment of us moving was falling on deaf ears. Saying it now, she understands. You know, I have a young lady here. I don't have a small child. I have a young lady that can see that the experiences that she now has that she wouldn't have had.
The pendulum continues to swing. At this stage, I feel like I could literally flip a coin. Is the grass greener on the other side? I don't know. Dotun Adebayo, though, sums it up for me exceptionally well in the way of a professional journalist on episode 12, Give and Take.
The world thrives on an exchange of ideas. When I'm in America, my creative thinking, and more importantly, my critical thinking is on fire, because everything I see around me is just making me think of a song, think of a poem, think of a book, think of making a film, think of starting a new career, think of everything around me. Everything is exciting to us, you know, because it's like, wow, buzz, 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 left, right, center. And I imagine it's like that for Americans who come to Britain. It gives them an opportunity to view from a different perspective. And that creates something original. And that's what the world thrives on. It thrives on difference. Why go and have more of the same when you can actually go and have more of a slightly different thing?
There we have it. I've given you a rundown, a really brief rundown, of the whole American Dreamers season. What a journey it's been. It's been great. It's been great fun. I have met and connected with so many phenomenal people. I have felt really privileged to have had them share some of their most intimate, vulnerable, embarrassing, and most inspiring moments. This whole series has definitely informed, entertained, and inspired me. I hope it's given those of you who are considering relocating food for thought, and I really hope that it's brought some comfort to those who have already made the move. Teamwork makes the dream work. As always, I have to extend my gratitude to all the amazing guests. Shout out to all of you who have got in touch and said, yep, look, I'd love to feature, I'd love to get involved. All the potential interviewees and guests we've got lined up. A shout out to Aura Studios Production, my assistant producer, Brianna Johan, who is just fab, and oh my gosh, editor David Devereaux, who is just the man that can. My name is Claire Clotty. Keep in touch with me. I'm on all the socials to find out how my journey, how my life in America continues to evolve.